No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.
Hello, welcome to this Brass Tacks podcast. It's weeknights, 9:25 on CNN News 18. I'm Zucker Jacob, and with me, as always, Ansia Kumar. What have we got tonight?
It's still Maharashtra, Zucker, because after about, what, more than a month, the dust seems to have finally settled in Maharashtra, because Uddhav Thackeray, a man who has never run for an election or anything like that, is now all set to become the chief minister.
What a story. What a story for Uddhav Thackeray himself. I remember back in the early 2000s when he sort of burst onto the scene and Balasaheb was this aging figure. And in 2005, I think, when this big split happened between him and Raj Thackeray, and Raj was always this charismatic character. He was a cartoonist, much like Balasaheb Thackeray.
He was always the protege, right?
In that sense, and he was supposedly the chosen one. And then suddenly Balasaheb had this change of heart. Because Uddhav never really was, I mean, the word reluctant politician before Rahul Gandhi came along was actually used in the context of Uddhav. He was never really interested in mainstream politics. He was not cut out for the rough and tumble. He was not a cutthroat kind of a guy. He was interested in his wildlife photography, so on and so forth. And in 2005, I think when Raj sort of split and he walked away and formed the MNS, I remember there were these pictures of how camera crews, and I think 24/7 news channels were just beginning to come up in India at that time, how these camera crews basically captured Uddhav going off alone, and nobody was really sort of following him, or nobody was giving him too much attention. And at the other end, just within a few nights, there were these images of Raj Thackeray driving in a Ferrari with Sachin Tendulkar. And that sort of really, you know, the contrast in those images was so visible. And I think, I'm not sure if it was the 2009 State Assembly election, whichever the first big MNS election was, where he won a bunch of seats. And then everybody was like, oh, this is the guy who's going to take over the reins after Balasaheb's death, because Uddhav has really not proven anything. I think the real turning point in Uddhav Thackeray's career in that sense was, I think, the 2012 BMC elections. That's when I think he sort of showed to the Sena cadre, the rank and file, what he's capable of, and that he has leadership qualities, and that he has he is leadership material. And then, of course, Balasaheb passed away. And I think 13, 14 was just basically riding on the coattails of the rise of the BJP and the rise of Narendra Modi. But the story in the last few years, more so after the humiliation of 2014, was I think by 2014 itself, Uddhav Thackeray got a great sense that if the BJP were to grow in Maharashtra, it will have to be at the expense of his party.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, those are the two parties which have the similar vote bank. Right. So I think he realized that the BJP was literally going to be an existential threat to the growth and the very survival of his party. And remember, the Sena is not a pan Maharashtra party in that sense.
Course.
They have pockets of influence, they have pockets of support. And it was in those pockets that the BJP was sort of spreading its tentacles. So I think he realized in 2014 itself that he will have to start thinking long term. And, you know, lo and behold, the 2019 results were in such a way that he could, I think he sensed a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
I think he felt, and obviously egged on by his closest advisors, I believe his wife really sort of calls the shots, is what I'm given to understand by one senior political advisor. I think they all collectively felt, and they impressed upon Uddhav, that this was it. This was the moment that he had to sort of strike a hard bargain. If it came down to, you know, splitting this alliance, an alliance that Balasaheb...
30 years, I mean,
30
that's
years,
crazy.
Imagine that. So I think he sensed the importance of the moment, and he sensed that this moment is not going to come again.
Yeah.
And if he lets go of this opportunity, then maybe, you know, that's it. His party is doomed. At least the growth of his party is doomed. So he drove a hard bargain. And I think it got to a point where, like we've been talking about this in the podcast, right? It was his word against Amit Shah's.
Yeah.
And neither could be seen as backing down. One is...
You had that press conference of Uddhav Thackeray. I've never seen anything like that.
Exactly.
He came out and he said, no one has ever accused anyone from the Thackeray family of
lying. Absolutely. Absolutely. And he was accusing the second most powerful man in the country of being a liar. So neither Uddhav Thackeray nor Amit Shah could be seen publicly as climbing down from their position. And then we have the, you know, dramatic events of the last 20 days or so. I want to look forward to what this could possibly be like. Yes, a lot of people are talking about, you know, the weight of contradictions. And ideologically polar opposites coming together. It's going to be like the Kumaraswamy government in Karnataka. It's not going to last for too long. It may well not last for much long. But I think it's a little different from the Kumaraswamy example, primarily because of a couple of reasons. In the Kumaraswamy example, you know, Kumaraswamy had 37 MLAs.
Yeah.
The Congress had 80. So there was always a you know, difference there itself. You know, the Congress had twice, more than twice of the MLAs that...
Here, they're not so far apart,
and
actually,
in any case,
so
you know, Uddhav has a slightly larger number of MLAs.
Yeah, he does.
The only sort of criticality I see in this whole setup is Mr. Pawar. And, you know, the day he decides, okay, I'm done with this, he can pull the rug and this government may or may not last. I don't think the Congress has much of a choice. I think, you know, all of this stuff about Sonia Gandhi and Rahul Gandhi are very wary about losing the secular tag and all of that. I think, you know, it's just to make them look good. Honestly, they are politicians. They've done this for a very long time. They realize there is something called real politics. Right now, the single biggest thing is to try and checkmate the BJP, which they have done. All these old fault lines of secular and communal, I think, are slightly outdated, especially after, you know, post the Babri Masjid verdict. I think it's slightly outdated. Let's see. Maybe this, like I said, this coalition may still end up collapsing under the weight of its own, you know, contradictions. But I wouldn't brush it off that easily. Because these are, out of the four principal political parties in Maharashtra, three of them have come together.
Yeah.
Whatever their differences are, it has this larger-than-life figure, Sharad Pawar, sort of overseeing it. It's got a formidable Thackeray name leading the government. And there will be berths for everybody. So I suspect it might have a longer shelf life than Kumaraswamy's experiment. But let's see. Who's to say? I mean, we've seen stranger things in the last month.
Absolutely, for sure.
We should be the last judges of anything.
No, but you were talking about Uddhav Thackeray and the story of Uddhav Thackeray, but the other big story is of Sharad Pawar himself.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought a month, two ago, you would have just written him off saying, oh God, he's 70-something, there's no way that he can pull it off. But clearly the old man still has it.
Oh, he certainly does. I think those, you know, those pictures from Satara where he was campaigning in the rain, that obviously, you know, it went viral. Maybe it swung some amount of sympathy vote in favor of Mr. Pawar. But I think what he has shown in the last month or so, and particularly in the last week or so, is when it comes to the, you know, the whole business of political maneuvering, that is a different art altogether. I mean, winning elections is one art. It's clearly, you know, something that the likes of Amit Shah or Modi have really cut their teeth in. But the art of political maneuvering, I think that's still old school.
You've perfected got to it.
Deal with, you know, these varied interests, carry everybody along.
Yeah.
That is not an art that you would associate with either an Amit Shah or a Narendra Modi. That is something that you associate with like a Pranab Mukherjee or a Sonia Gandhi or a Sharad Pawar. And I think that's what he has demonstrated, particularly in the last week, where everybody thought, you know, every day we were all thinking, oh, is this actually just uncle and nephew, you know, hand in glove? They're in cahoots and they're just, you know, pulling off a fast one on everybody. But turns out that there was an actual rebellion. Yes, Ajit Pawar rebelled. For some inexplicable reason, the BJP leadership seemed to buy his promise that he'll get 28 or 30 MLAs. He was not able to deliver that. And the way old man Pawar turned it around into this, you know, he's attacked me. He's attacked the patriarch of this party, of this family, and thereby was able to rally the entire rank and file, rally all the MLAs, and ensure that Ajit Pawar was left with less than five MLAs to back him. I think that really has not just cemented Sharad Pawar as this, you know, larger-than-life figure who's going to be overseeing this coalition, but I'd be very keen and very interested in seeing how Team BJP, particularly the central leadership, response to this. There have been sort of cases against some of Mr. Pawar's closest aides, including Praful Patel and so on. Mr. Pawar himself is supposedly the subject of an ED investigation.
He has gone for an ED hearing.
Yeah, so I'd like to see how that's going. I'd like to see which way the needle is moving on that story. But yeah, no doubt about it. I think Sharad Pawar has given an apt lesson to everyone in old-style political maneuvering.
And more so to the BJP, because clearly they've burned their fingers by basically putting all of their eggs in the Ajit Pawar basket. Because he did not have that kind of hold over the NCP MLAs as BJP would have expected him to. In a way, he almost seems like, I'm sorry for this whole reference, but a Trojan horse for the BJP.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out that way. Again, I said this yesterday, I really can't find a rational explanation for, yes, okay, even if Ajit Pawar were to approach you, as Amit Shah has now said, why would you take his claims at face value?
Yeah.
I mean, and why would you, you know, exhibit such hurry, such a stealth by night operation?
Yeah, what did it all come down to? What that 547 waking up the president and removing president's rule and then having this whole swearing in?
What was the tearing hurry to have done all of that? You know, subvert so many institutions, subvert so many individuals, you know, work through the night to get this stealth by night operation going, ultimately for the whole thing to just come unraveling in 3 days' time. I think something has seriously gone wrong. Maybe we won't get the entire story in the public domain. Maybe we will some years down the line. But there was a miscalculation, certainly by the senior BJP leadership, whether it was the Prime Minister, whether it was Amit Shah, no matter whose operation this was. At the end of the day, the governor's office doesn't come looking good.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister's office doesn't look good. The President's office doesn't look good. Those institutions have taken a bit of a knock because of what happened. And I think there will be some soul searching. There will definitely be some soul searching.
But anyway, for the time being, all eyes are going to be on the big swearing-in tomorrow.
Yep.
What we are learning is that the Gandhis may not be attending it.
Yeah, again, I find it very clumsy, you know, because at the end of the day, the Congress Party needs to decide what is more important for it. Are these old fault lines of secular communal more important to it? Or is political expediency more important? Is keeping the BJP in check more important? Is winning states more important? I think it's clear as daylight that the Congress Party on its own cannot match the BJP.
Manage,
you know, it simply cannot. The only way it can match the BJP is by building these coalitions. And that is a weakness for the BJP. The BJP is bad at managing coalitions. Certainly, you know, they did a better job when Mr. Vajpayee was Prime Minister. But certainly under Modi and Shah, this is one of their Achilles' heels. They can't seem to manage coalitions. So the Congress, and particularly the highest leadership, you know, Sonia Gandhi and Rahul Gandhi not turning up tomorrow at Uddhav Thackeray's swearing in, will really leave a bad taste. I mean, Uddhav Thackeray will feel bad. I think the Shiv Senics will feel bad. Even
it's
Mr.
already
Pawar,
starting off on the wrong note.
It's starting off
case,
on the wrong note. Why would you leave that kind of a bitter aftertaste on a day when clearly both, I mean, the Sena, the NCP, the Congress can all celebrate.
Yeah.
They've actually literally held the BJP in its tracks. So, it's their decision at the end of the day. We're given to understand, at least from people close to Rahul Gandhi, they're defending it by saying, well, he's just an MP. Mm. Why should he go? What's his locus? And people who are close to Sonia Gandhi are suggesting that, you know, she's historically been keeping unwell, so she might not be in a position to travel to Mumbai. Whatever. I don't know. There might be a genuine reason. I don't know. But I think politically, it would make eminent sense for both of them to go to Mumbai and be part of this swearing in.
But this whole Maharashtra episode that's unraveled in this last 1 month or so, it'll have larger implications for the BJP in several other states as well, especially states where elections are due, like Jharkhand, for instance, where another long-standing ally like JDU, they are contesting separately. They're not allying with the BJP.
Yeah.
And already there is a bit of acrimony as far as Nitish Kumar and the BJP top brass is concerned. So you never know where this will go.
So, you know, I think the one worry for the BJP is they need to find a way to manage allies better. Clearly, if, you know, the oldest saffron alliance is broken and parted ways so bitterly, everybody's watching this, right? The Akalis are watching this. The JDU is watching this. Even in Jharkhand, a small party like the All Jharkhand Students Union, which I think was asking for 5 seats, if I'm not mistaken, some around, you know, single-digit seats, and the BJP was not willing to give them those seats. They're all looking at this, and they're all like, you know, nobody likes a bully, right? Nobody likes a class bully. And the BJP thinks that they can, at least in state-level elections, maybe in national elections, maybe in the general elections, because Mr. Modi is still such a towering figure, they will still get away with it. But in state elections, in local elections, to try and, you know, behave like you're the bully in the classroom will have a backlash.
Yeah.
And I suspect, you know, Nitish will be watching very closely what happened in Maharashtra. The Jharkhand, again, we have a similar situation where you've got the BJP on the one side and you've got this 3-4-5 party alliance of Congress and the Jharkhand Mukti Morcha and other smaller parties on the other. And from whatever I've heard, I haven't been there, I haven't traveled to Jharkhand. A couple of journalists who had gone there and come back seem to suggest that I don't think it's a cakewalk. They don't think it's a cakewalk for Raghubar Das. It's going to be a tight election. And you never know. Nobody thought that Maharashtra is going to be going to end up this way. No one thought Haryana would end up the way it did. So you never know. These smaller states, localized election tends to surprise a lot more.
All right. You never know. You still never know what will happen in Maharashtra, whether it's the swearing in tomorrow or not. But one thing that you can be assured of is that you'll only get 100% news and no opinion on Brass Tacks tonight at 9:25 on CNN News 18.
No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.